What's going on, man?
We got some Phillies or Phillies. Fuck, you can tell where my mind's at
Well,
already.
yeah, I mean, we're less than 3 weeks from pitchers and catchers reporting in spring training, so I mean,
Real quick, breaking news. Jorge Polanco traded to the Mariners.
I did get a blurb on my phone about that, so that's interesting.
But no, we're talking Eagles news.
Yeah, let's dive in. So I don't know where to begin. We've had some coaching changes. We've had, an OC gone, a DC gone, pretty much an entire staff gone outside of the head coach. We've also had an interesting interview. Let's dive into the interview first. I like this one.
So one Jason Kelce was interviewed by a reporter from the Philadelphia Inquirer after the Chiefs won the AFC Championship game to earn the right to represent the AFC, obviously in the AFC Championship game. And so he was talking to this reporter and basically indicated that regardless of whether he's back or not, he wanted to be involved with the team, and because the way they represent the city and everything else. But basically, the way he was talking was like he's not retiring yet from on-field play. And then even when he does, he wants to work for the team in some capacity.
Yeah, and it's very well he should. I frame Jason Kelce as being penultimate team guy, akin to, and we'll dive out of the Eagles and even football realm here. I always say this with certain players that I've been exposed to a lot during my tenure out here in the Midwest. Yadier Molina for the St. Louis Cardinals, to me, was always one of those guys, team guy. Adam Wainwright in the same regard, where you always thought that once the time was done, they'd come back and work for the club. And guess what? Yachty sat out a year and came back and is now working some front office type gig for the Cardinals. Jason Kelce, obviously to me, same regard in that I don't think that he will ever do anything else, including vend peanuts for any other team. If that was the job the Eagles had for him, you better believe that he would do it because he's a Philly guy through and through.
Somebody that's currently on their staff, not necessarily their coaching staff or anything like that, but somebody that they've hired to do like community outreach and player development kind of stuff and all that, just kind of like a jack of all trades for the team, is Connor Barwin.
Yeah, so that's, I haven't heard that name in a while.
So he's been with the team pretty much since he retired. Made his name, came up with Houston, came here, finished his career with the Giants, but he said that he felt the most connection to any city. Now he's a Detroit kid too. He's from Detroit, but he said the most connection to any city that he's ever felt in the NFL has been in Philly. And if you remember back when he was playing, he was the guy that was riding his bike and taking the subway to get to practices and stuff.
Yeah,
So
I do remember
really,
that.
like he really adopted the city, and the city adopted him. He really ingratiated himself. He's done a lot, like more charity work in this city than, any Eagle that I can remember in the last 10, 20 years, just by himself. And that's not to knock any of the other Eagles players, because a lot of them have done a lot of good work. Even, Jason himself doing his Eagles Fly for Leukemia stuff down at the Ocean Drive in Sea Isle every summer. A lot of these guys take up the work for themselves. Rodney McLeod, when he was here, did a ton of work in the community, did a ton of good stuff for, I believe he did stuff for CHOP and for the Ronald McDonald House and for all kinds of other charities. Like there's been a we've been very lucky with our athletes in Philly, especially with the Eagles, that they've really picked up the torch for the city and tried to lead in good ways. And a lot of times it doesn't get a lot of publicity, but
no, they're doing the work. No, I don't mean to interrupt you, but that's, I think you just smashed a perfect point there. Not only does it not get publicity, the negative Philly, the Negadelphia, the bad stuff always gets the highlights in the reels. And then that's what sucks. It's like Philly is known for really good stuff from really good people, Eagles, Phillies, whoever, you know what I mean?
Right, right. So that being said, you know, we've been lucky to have a lot of great athletes and better people play in the city. And it seems to be continuing with Jason, where Jason's just like, you know what, even if I'm not on the field, I want to do something to give back to this city. And so he's going to be here. And it really, honestly, reading what he said and listening to what he said, it looks to me like he'll be back. Now, I could be completely wrong, and I hope I'm not, because obviously we all love watching him play, and he damn sure deserves a better ending than what he got. But that kind of leads us to our next point, which, you know, when the season ended, I know I was not in a good headspace as far as where this team was. Tom, I don't believe you were either.
No.
And kind of our expectations were somewhat tempered going into the next season. And then all the BS that comes out with the media trying to play stuff up, because let's face it, look, Philly's a great sports town, best sports town in the country as far as I'm concerned. Are somewhere along the way, our sports media went from trying to deliver actual genuine news because we're so hungry for sports content to like taking little things and running with them when they didn't really matter, or they're just taking things out of context. So the next thing we hear is these reports about Jalen and how Jalen's not the leader everyone thought he was, and how the like people are afraid to approach him and stuff like that. And then, of course, the player who was not named calls himself out and says, no, I was the one that said that, and that's not what I meant. You're completely changing the narrative of what I was trying to say. So let me set the record straight. And it was Britton Covey. And essentially what he had said was, what the media said he said was, that Jalen is unapproachable and that players are afraid to go to him and try and talk to him and stuff like that. And what Britton said was that he seemed like that, but it couldn't be further from the truth, that he's always trying to talk to people on the team, and he's a great teammate and a great leader and all that stuff. So that had kind of tempered it. But then we find out what the changes are going to be on this staff. You know, Deshaun Desai's out.
Let's address all that first. We lose the DC stuff, and that's between Sean Desai and everyone's favorite Matt Patricia.
Oh, fuck.
And and so that whole side is gone. And we all knew the writing was on the wall for Brian Johnson. And I mean, that wasn't a surprise to anybody. I think what was more surprising was the fact that the dude was getting head coaching interviews. You know, whatever. but there's a door. Whatever you're going to do, get on out of Philly. We don't want to ever see you again, any of you. Especially you, Matt Patricia, because you're garbage. Anyway, sorry. I had to say that because I was upset about how all that was. Anyway, go.
You're good. So then we start learning, you know, we hear these names. So, you know, last time we recorded a Jelts, we talked about Ron Rivera. We talked about who was the offensive coordinator? We were talking about Cliff Kingsbury.
Cliff Kingsbury was a name we threw around. And then we just kind of went into these different rounds of, you know, not necessarily even talking on pod necessarily, but you and I were kind of going back and forth with, you know, this all had to revolve around veteran leadership. This could not be just brand new guys coming in. This had to be veteran leadership, and it also had to be, you know what, in case things start to fall apart, maybe one of these guys, OC, DC, new guys, might have to step up for Nick Sirianni.
Right.
That was a conversation we had. And I, you know, look, I'm excited to see what you have to say about our defensive situation here, because I'm I'm still kind of like feeling it out.
So here's what we got. All right. Every defensive coordinator we've hired pretty much got going back to, I mean, Jim Schwartz ran his own defense. So everybody that's been under Nick Sirianni as a defensive coordinator has been a cheap imitation of Vic Fangio. They've all run his offense. They're all Fangio disciples. Of course, we had that fucking nerd, Jonathan Gannon, who lied and fucked up our chances of getting Vic Fangio when we could have had him the first fucking time and not had to have Desai. So, you know, we end up missing out on Fangio. Fangio goes to the Dolphins, and we get Sean Desai. Sean Desai, honestly, look, if we look back at the season through, not in the moment, like we look back at it with clear eyes, Sean Desai was not the problem on defense. He wasn't an answer on defense, but we needed better defensive backs. We needed better linebackers than what we had. Mm-hmm. Failed to get us linebacking help that was adequate for this team, partly because who knew that N'Kobe Dean was going to spend most of the season hurt, partly because, you know, he thought that he was doing enough with N'Kobe Dean and with Zach Cunningham, right? So then we get to our defensive backfield, where we were bringing back Darius Slay was, we thought, you know, one of the best corners in the league. James Bradbury, same thing. We were both extremely happy that we were bringing both of those guys back, as was 99.9% of the fan base. And I think if they're all honest with themselves, every single member of the Eagles fan base was extremely excited after how they played last year that we were bringing both of those men back to be our one and two corners.
Dude, 100%. The funny thing is, though, I think you and I, and if I, you know, we can, you know, we probably are on recording for being the opposite about this. As excited as I was to see those guys back, there was still big question marks defensive backfield.
Yeah.
You know, regardless of those two guys coming back and regardless of the way they would play and how this, but yeah, no, go ahead. I just, you know, had to kind of get that out there.
Now, where we were kind of, you know, and we were, and let's throw the rookies in it too. We were excited about the defensive backs that we drafted, the corners, right?
Yeah.
The linebackers, yeah. We didn't really, I mean, we got Nolan Smith, but he's an edge rusher, so that was neither here nor there. Now, we did expect more out of him, but that's another story for another time.
Right.
What we did expect more out of was the young defensive backs that we drafted. We expected more out of Keely Ringo. We expected more out of Eli Ricks. Zach McPherson, who unfortunately went down with a knee injury. You know, we expected Reed Blankenship to take the next step after he kind of busted out of nowhere as an undrafted free agent last year. We thought he was going to take the next step and be maybe the next Brian Dawkins. Not the next Brian Dawkins, but the next really good safety we had. We had hoped that Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, CD Deuce, whatever the fuck you want to call him, that he was going to come back and play for us. But unfortunately, that fell apart. He didn't. You know, and then, but the safety position was definitely an area of concern for us going into this season. And all that all fell apart. Obviously, everything behind our defensive line. Our defensive line didn't play well. So, and we lost the defensive backs coach that all the players wanted to be the new DC. So, you know, there was a lot of unknown on the defensive side. Obviously, we all know how it played out. But look, Sean Desai was making the corrections in the second half of games that was allowing us to take teams like the Chiefs, like the Dolphins, and other teams that, yeah, they may have scored on us in the first half of the game, but the second half of the game, they weren't doing shit on offense because he was making the correct adjustments.
Right, right.
And we get blown out by the Cowboys and the Niners. And then all of a sudden, Matt Patricia's the defensive coordinator. And it seemed like, I don't know if it was a combination of the Niners loss and the Cowboys loss and the Sean Desai situation, or if it was one of them or what it was, but the team had its heart ripped out after that Niners game. And I thought maybe they would recover for the Cowboys game, and they didn't. And then you figure, all right, well, it's the Seahawks. We got to beat them. And I think maybe if we kept the Sai, we win one or two more games the rest of the way than we won, because we won one game.
Yeah.
And that was a changes the outlook.
Yeah, the one game they won was a basically a barely hang-on win against the Giants.
Right.
Who were a bad team. I mean...
yeah. Oh, a bad team who also whooped our ass in the final game.
Exactly. And that's what... I think that's what watching basically the last... We'll say the last half of the season, really, was pretty awful.
Yeah.
Not in counting all the losses or whatever. I think the thing that scared me the most, and again, regardless of who the coaches were in place and whatever, is that to go 10-1, and we've talked about this, that team was shaky as all get out.
Mm-hmm.
And it just did not feel good, I mean, at all. And I just really wondered what was going to happen. And, you know, boy, golly, I've never seen a team fall apart any worse than that. And I've watched, you know, we got 4 decades worth of experience here. It sucks. Yeah. I just don't ever recall seeing a team just completely just kersplat like that.
And it could be down to recency bias and all that stuff. That was the worst collapse that I've ever seen an Eagles team make. And I'm talking, you know, my previous, I don't want to say high water mark, I guess the previous low water mark as far as seeing a team collapse like that was the Kotite team that started out 7-2 or 9-2 and finished 9-6 or no, 7-9. So they were 7-2, mm-hmm. finished 7-9 and missed the playoffs, lost the final 7 games.
You're right. I mean, that's you're exactly right. Recency bias, whatever. I think the thing that hurts the most is, and if you look back at that Kotite team, the team the year before did not go to the Super Bowl.
You're right.
And almost win the Super Bowl. And I think that's what hurts the most is a team that almost wins the Super Bowl to start out as hot, the best team in the NFL by record anyway, through the first 11-12 weeks of the season, and then wow, just I don't know, you know, it's just hard to fathom.
Like it's not like they were world beaters, like you said, through the first 11-12 weeks of the season. They were definitely shaky. They absolutely were. But you kept thinking, you know what? Look, they're 10-1, and they haven't come close to playing their best ball. Wait until they figure it out.
Right. Yeah.
But that little nagging voice inside my head the whole time saying, dude, they're not figuring out shit. This is who they are. They're winning despite themselves.
Yeah.
They're winning despite their coaching. They're winning despite their game plan. You know, this is talent carrying a team that is not executing, that is not performing. Something is fundamentally flawed with this team. And even if they finish the season with the best record in the NFL, going as the number one seed, home field advantage throughout, there is every chance, the same amount of chance that they make it to the Super Bowl is the same amount of chance they have of getting knocked out in the first game that they play in the playoffs.
Yep.
Because they were so uneven. The coaching was not good. There's no other way to put it. The game plan sucked. It straight up sucked. The defense, as bad as they played, was the only reason that they were winning, because the defense was out there making stops when they needed to, and the offense was just getting so many chances to score that they were just, oh shit, look, we scored a touchdown. You know, it was brutal. Brutal is the only fucking word for it. It was as fun as the 2022 season was and that playoff run was, this was the absolute complete opposite. The only way it could have been worse is if they were losing those games.
Right. And you know, here's the, you know what the insane thing is? The absolute insane thing. Let's go to the other side of the road here and talk about the Phillies real quick. The Phillies gave us the same level of excitement the same year, couldn't finish it off and lose the World Series in six to Houston, okay? And then, boom, start out slow, but then completely turn it back around, and here we go. And then absolutely just completely show up against the Marlins, against the Braves, again, the best team in baseball, and completely shut them down. And then the Diamondbacks happened, and your heart's just ripped out of your chest. Right. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, man, I don't know if I can withstand that. And this Eagles collapse made me completely forget about that.
Yeah.
Like, okay, entirely. Yeah.
Well, see, and here's the thing, too. When that after that Arizona series, I didn't want to think about baseball. I didn't want to talk about baseball. I stopped doing that. The Topps, the baseball card game thing that we were doing, the collecting.
Yeah, the bunt. Yeah.
I completely stopped doing it because I was so. I'm like, dude, I don't want to know about baseball right now. I don't want anything to do with it. But the Eagles. By the time we lost that game, I was so numb to it because I had already spent all my anger, my vitriol, and the idea that we might actually do something. I was over that.
Because they blew it so much in the regular season. I was like, eh.
Right. I had 7 weeks to mourn this team before they were officially dead.
Yeah.
And yeah. With the Phillies, it was boom, 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 boom. And just winning and winning and winning. Like, started off slow, like you said. And then by the time they hit their stride, and then it was like they hit a brick wall.
Yeah.
So it was a sudden thing. And it was like, oh, shit. Wait, that wasn't supposed to happen. But this Eagles team, it felt like this is how it was supposed to happen. And the difference being, too, do you remember what Dallas Goedert said when they lost to the Cardinals?
You have to refresh my memory.
You know, this is what we've been waiting for. We've been, you know, a lot of people have just been kind of coasting since we clinched the playoffs. And as soon as we get into the playoffs, we're going to flip that switch and it'll be just like last year. Well, the Eagles were basically the anti-Phillies or vice versa because the Eagles started out hot and then died at the end of the year.
Right. Yeah.
The Phillies started out dead. And flip that switch. So the Phillies know how to flip the switch. The Eagles had no fucking clue. And they thought they could and absolutely could not.
Right. And I think the thing to me was that I think the Phillies loss was so heart-wrenching that I was the same way. I was like, I'm done. I don't know that I can subscribe to MLB TV, which I had been doing religiously for like 15 years at that point. I was like, I don't know that I could do this anymore. Like, and I was about to cancel my subscription. I was done. And, man, lo and behold, Eagles come around. And, yeah, same thing, man. I knew that this was going to happen. I was getting text messages after that Buccaneers lost in the playoffs saying, oh, I'm so sorry, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, yeah, for what? Like, this was going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, I had a bracket where I picked the Buccaneers over the Eagles. I stopped picking with my heart with this team like a month ago.
Right.
Like, I'm not stupid. You know what I mean?
I'm telling you right now, I walked, and I told you this before, one of the supervisors on another shift is a huge Bucks fan. And so we went back and forth, you know, when we played them, we would joke back and forth, like, needling each other. This time she goes, I'm afraid that if I start making fun of you for this, you're going to be on suicide watch. Yeah. And that was before the game. And I was like, Morgan, congratulations on your team getting a first-round bye.
Yeah. Because
that's exactly what this is. You guys playing the Eagles is a first-round bye. Hopefully none of your players get injured. You guys are on to the second round. Congratulations.
Yeah. Yeah. No, And I, like I said, I think that was the thing that made me forget about that heart-wrenching Phillies loss was the fact that I had, like you said, weeks of preparation. It was a slow burn. Slow burn for, you know, all the bad reasons.
Yeah.
But I want to talk to positives with you.
Wait, hold on real quick. Before we get to the positives, because we definitely need to get some positives. I don't remember if I said this or not on the pod after we talked about that game, but just so it's absolutely 100% clear, the assholes who were in Tampa, the Eagles fans, throwing shit at Sirianni and throwing shit at the players and talking shit and all that stuff, go find another fucking team to root for.
Yeah, that's stupid.
That's asinine.
Look, I'm gonna be sitting here, and I will be God's honest that I and I've said this bluntly here and with you in off pod. Sirianni to me is on a very short leash, and I for one call for his head after that. And only reason why is because, you know, he's the leader, you know, and I think because expectations were so high. I've since kind of calmed down, and I'm still on the short leash thing. Half a season, maybe, which has gone up from a quarter of a season, which I gave him before. But I think part of that is because Vic Fangio is coming back. And, you know, there's some excitement to be had. I don't know. What say you about this?
All right, so here's where I'm at. So – Fangio, I wasn't really on board, but at this point, he's been named by the top offensive minds in the game right now as the hardest defensive coordinator in the league to make adjustments against, because most of his defensive fronts and most of his defensive looks look exactly the same to start. But it's pre-snap motion. It's the motion once the snap happens. There's so many different elements to it. It's such an intricate defense. I'm excited. Not only am I excited because of the way the defense runs and how here's the thing with Vic Fangio. He can actually cater his defense. He understands his defense better than anyone because it's his fucking defense. He can cater his defense and kind of craft it and mold it to fit the talent he has on the defense. Not only that, he is bringing in two coordinators to work with him. He's bringing in Clint Hurt as the defensive line coach.
Who is a big dude, by the way.
Yes. Yeah. He was the former defensive coordinator in Seattle, and he's bringing in one of Hurt's assistants from Seattle, Carl Scott, who is the DB coach. Think about the Seattle defense over the years. And I'm excited. Not only am I excited because it's fresh ideas and fresh coaches, fresh set of eyes that can coach these players up. I don't think that our young players developed last year because I don't think they had adequate coaching. These guys are capable of coaching up these young players and getting the most out of them. My one concern, well, two concerns, one of them with Howie, one of them with the defensive scheme. Howie needs to commit to linebacker. He needs to understand, because in his press conference, he said, you know, the years that we went to the Super Bowl, if you look, we got really good linebacker play. Yes, you did, because you had competent linebackers. You had Nigel Bradham in the Super Bowl year where we won. You had I don't remember exactly who else was playing linebacker, but Nigel Bradham for one. When you were playing in the 2023 Super Bowl, you had Kaiser White, you had TJ Edwards, you had competent linebacker. Now, so if we actually go and get good linebackers, Jeremiah Trotter Jr., I'm looking at you, you know, that's one thing. the thing I'm concerned about with Fangio is we crucified Desai and Patricia for dropping edge rushers back into coverage, which means Hassan Reddick, Nolan Smith. Defense does that, and it does it as a high, at a higher rate than the than Desai and Patricia did it. So that I feel like needs to be curbed a little bit, changed up a little bit. I don't know if it will, but that's something to, you know, that's something to keep an eye on. But I'm extremely excited for these for this this coordinator to get in there with his new coaches and do his thing, man.
I don't have any reservations, obviously, against Vic Fangio coming back whatsoever. And it was good to see. I was the same way. I saw fresh blood coming in, and because I saw the screen or the picture of Clint Hurt and was like, my goodness, just put a uniform on that man and let him be the entire defense. He's a big dude.
Yeah, he is.
The funny thing is, though, is that you know, especially to hear it out of your mouth, which just cracks me up almost. Seattle guys, so there's a little bit of a rub with Pete Carroll. So
Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll. But here's the thing. But you're 100% correct. Because look, here's the thing. I don't think that Pete Carroll rubbed off his little trutherness on these guys. I think they kind of looked at him really, yeah, coach, okay. Because he's the head coach, their defense.
And right. Yeah.
Pete Carroll's an offensive guy.
Yeah. So I don't think
he's sticking his stupid nose in their room too often.
But, yeah. No. I had to say it. Okay. I'm excited to just for the sheer fact of exactly what you said. We've got different heads in the room. We've got different brains to pick. We've got basically a different teacher in the classroom, mm-hmm. because the current teacher was awful. And now we need to try to right the ship, that's harder to do because, yeah. You know, from the education perspective, if I'm going to use that as an analogy, is that sometimes you teach bad traits. And so now you have to unteach and then you got to reteach. So this is going to be a work in progress. And maybe that's why I'm also thinking, well, maybe give Sirianni a little bit longer leash because now you got a whole new body to work with. Coupled with the fact that you're gonna have different players, and we'll get to this here toward the end here. You know, not to say that the guys that we're gonna necessarily mention are going to be Eagles, but hopefully they will be when we talk about the 2024 NFL draft. So
now, one more thing that I like about the Vic Fangio hire. What was one of the biggest differences between the 2022 team and the 2023 team?
The 2022 team was consistent. There was a lot of consistency there to me anyway, as far as the way they played. You know, and it, of course this isn't just necessarily defensively too, if I'm thinking of it that way. It just felt like more of a well-oiled machine. Like you knew what you're gonna get. And you got a lot, and I think you and I have kind of hemmed and hawed and talked about this, maybe off pod. You got a lot out of your players that you weren't expecting anything out of. Reed Blankenship, for example, in that 2022 team. I wasn't expecting anything out of Reed Blankenship. I don't think anyone was.
Right.
The guy was basically an undrafted off the street guy. And man, he played his butt off in 2022. You know, you had a lot of people get a lot of just really good play. It was very consistent play. And 2023 was not consistent at all. Like, it was bad. And then it went from inconsistent to really bad, you know? So that's what I'm looking forward to.
You know what you can look forward to in between the 2024 and 2025 seasons, unless things go completely horribly off the rails.
What's that?
Vic Fangio is still going to be your defensive coordinator in 2025.
Ooh,
we're not going to have Vic Fangio has been a head coach enough. And people have seen enough of him as a head coach. You don't have to worry about him getting poached. And that's one of the biggest things to me when you say consistency is having the consistency at those coordinator positions.
Yes.
That's exactly. Something that you can't put a price tag on that, right? When you look at the what was one of the big things that we were excited for going into 2023 on offense? It was that for the first time since, I think, high school or something like that, Jalen Hurts was going to have the same offensive coordinator in two consecutive years. And what happened when that happened? He had an MVP caliber season. We go to the Super
Bowl. Yep, yep.
So.
Yeah, and then he gets gone, and yeah.
Right. So assuming that Kellen
Moore.
Yeah, I almost said Kellen Winslow. Kellen Moore. No. I think he's in jail, isn't he?
Yes, he is. Yeah, the junior. I don't know. His
senior
is.
No, senior's not. Senior's, not yet. Yeah. Senior's good, dude. I think. Yeah. So Kellen Moore can go two ways. One, the team underachieves. Sirianni's gone. Kellen Moore becomes your new head coach, as long as the offense doesn't completely crater. Or two, the team excels under Kellen Moore. And hopefully the Eagles figure out a way to keep him.
Yeah, no. And I, you know, it's funny. I can't say that I was a huge fan of the Kellen Moore announcements, you know, with him. I guess because, you know, he's got a history with one of our least favorite teams of all time.
Yeah.
You know, again, we're talking that this isn't like completely, foolproof here, but it's what over the last day or two, it's been very rumored and saying that sources are saying that the Eagles are hiring Kellen Moore, who's a former OC for the Dallas Cowboys.
I think it's actually
confirmed. Is it confirmed now?
I believe so. I could be wrong. Let me we'll figure that out later.
Yeah. But anyway, it's very close. It's close if not true. The thing is that he's a young guy with a lot of young perspective, and maybe to me, I think that was the one kind of silver lining to me. Other than it's the Dallas Cowboys thing that brings me down with it. But you know, young guy, young perspective, and we do see a lot of success with a lot of these young coaches in the league. And whether you like them or not, you do. I mean, you really do. And I think this is a good hiring, given the fact that you have a lot of young people on offense. As far as your weapons, you know, Jalen's still a young guy. What is he, 25? 26? He's young.
25.
You know? Yeah, young guy, and a lot of young receivers, and a lot of young running backs, and your age really comes at your O-line. And before we get into the potential, we're going to real quickly just run through a 2024 mock draft, way too early edition. I think it can work, whether or not he's the next answer, if it all falls apart to be the head coach, remains to be seen. But, maybe there is some positives to look at here between Vic Fangio and Kellen Moore. And I don't know.
I'm excited. I'm excited. I'm much more excited than I was going into the playoffs. Now that I know that Dallas is out of the playoffs, so they're not possibly winning the Super Bowl, I'm much more excited about next season. I'm not excited about the Niners being in the Super Bowl. Really wish the Packers would have finished the job, or the Lions would have. Let's talk about that real quick, because that just happened. So Dan Campbell, everybody's favorite new flavor of the week, if he just decides to kick a field goal or two, this game is completely different. The Lions in the game.
I'll read this. I'm going to read this word for you. I got a text message earlier from a friend of mine who's a Lions fan. And I felt really bad. And all it said was, you kicked the field goals instead of going for it twice on fourth down. You had to break the momentum, kick the damn ball. And it's like, that's it. Kick the damn ball. I mean, I don't know what, you know, and I don't know if it's like, yeah, you're still up by a touchdown, and yeah, you're trying to, you know, drive the stake in, but you're talking about an insanely potent offense. Like, you have way too many weapons you're going against. You give them the ball back at a half-decent field position, they're likely going to score. And guess what they did? They smoked you.
Yeah, there was just no excuse for – look, I get it. I like being aggressive, too, when I'm playing Madden. This wasn't Madden.
No.
This was the NFC Championship game for a starved city. This is a team that has never made the Super Bowl. However, I do think it's great that they have gone 0-16 this century and also made it to the NFC Championship game before Dallas has this century.
That is true. You know what the insane thing is? And I saw this earlier today. So the last time that they had won a road playoff game was 1957 against San Francisco. And they were down by 17 points at half. And guess what happens to them? They're up by 17 points at half on the road against San Francisco. And boom. Isn't history fun?
Look, and what's funny to me, too, is just the way that San Francisco won those games. It was like karma was just teasing us, because I turned on the Niners and Packers game when my little Apple Alert thing came up saying, hey, it's a close game, and the Packers are leading with so much time left in the fourth. They're going to beat the Niners. And so I was like, oh, well, fuck, yeah, I want to see this. And I turned it on, and then they lose. But I watched Aaron Jones score a touchdown, and then they still fucking lost.
I love it, right? So we have a Niners-Chiefs Super Bowl, which was pretty much everything that neither of us wanted. I was really, really pulling for the Lions there. And as much as I hate the Ravens, I honestly thought that this was Lamar's year. I thought that the Ravens were unstoppable, and boy, was I wrong on that. It is what it is. But let's go back to the Eagles real quick. We're going to kind of finish off here with a mock draft, and we're kind of stealing some things here from Bleeding Green Nation. I'm not going to say that this is exactly what you or I would necessarily do. And again, this obviously isn't what's going to happen, because there are so many weird things that tend to happen in the NFL draft. That's obviously how we ended up with Jalen Carter, who was by far the best, player taken overall. And what we grabbed him, 9, 10 last year?
Yeah, somewhere in that area.
I do want to
address that. Not necessarily that pick, but the year before when we took Jordan Davis. And look, Jordan Davis may still turn out to be one of the best defensive linemen that we've ever had. I'm so pissed that we didn't take Kyle Hamilton, especially with how he played in the AFC Championship game, because that was who I wanted. And I'm like, no, why would we take Jordan Davis? And one of my friends is like, oh no, dude, and I'm like, all right, yeah, that's a good pick, I guess. I still wanted Kyle Hamilton. And god damn,
did that dude
take over that game?
Yeah, and maybe Jordan Davis is a sophomore slump. I don't know. Hopefully he'll right the ship on that one.
I hope
So the Eagles need a lot of help in certain positions. And one way to address that is the NFL draft. And it's, again, it's not perfect. There's a lot of busts. We know that. And one of these players I do want to discuss, though, and again, this isn't anyone the Eagles would necessarily target, but it's just something, a comment I need to make here before we get into the mock draft real quick. And I shared this with you earlier, and it was a little screen grab of our friend Caleb Williams, quarterback from USC, who said that if any NFL team, USC, correct?
Yeah. Come on. Would he have been at any school other than a California college?
Yeah, that's a good point. Sometimes I lose my mind on where these guys are at, but Caleb Williams says that if any team passes him in the NFL, passes on him in the NFL draft, that they are making a mistake, and he's ready that is making him think that he's ready to lead a franchise to a Super Bowl. And it's like, I'm sorry, but like, if you think that highly of yourself at this stage in the game, that would be the first thing that says, I don't want to draft that guy. Like, I'm not saying that, you know, we've not seen this before with certain players, and maybe they've turned out to be great. But this guy is also the same person that says, I don't want to be drafted unless you make me part owner of the team.
Yeah, that's out of any other player. I'm taking it as, all right, this kid's got confidence. I like it. You know, we've had players before that have said, like Jordan or Justin Jefferson, who said, hey, look, man, so this many teams passed on me. I'm going to make every single one of them pay every time I play them. Same thing with DK Metcalf. I get it. It's good to have confidence in yourself, to think that you're good. But given this guy's track record, yeah, and his other comments he's made, I'm like, all right, buddy. Yeah, okay. Yeah, we got you.
It turns out to be more of a like an ill in the clubhouse, the old clubhouse cancer, if you will. And oh golly, I don't know. Like, I respect the guy's talent. I don't know that I respect him, and that's a problem. But let's talk about the Eagles. You know, the Eagles have a you know, later pick this year. There's been, you know, obviously there was some things there. We pulled up, you sent me an article from Bleeding Green Nation, and boy, their first pick on Bleeding Green makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Go for it.
So out of Georgia, of course, cornerback Kamari Lassiter, son of Kwame Lassiter. Dude, yeah, I could see it.
I've
been hearing Kool-Aid McKinstry too, but I don't think he's going to fall that far. We'll see. But Kamari Lassiter would hopefully instantly help this defensive backfield. And yeah, I have a feeling that James Bradbury is going to be a post June 1st cut casualty or trade if you can get anything for him. But yeah, man, he's not going to be with the team this year. Slay more than likely will be, but maybe he's not either. And then you go into this year with Kamari Lassiter as one corner and Keely Ringo as the other. Who knows?
Right. And I don't know. I like it, the fact that and Bleeding Green Nation points this out, that again, both Georgia guys, so this would reunite Lassiter with Ringo. They're familiar with each other. I think this could be a good thing. And like you said, Bradbury probably gone. One way or the other, maybe they'll figure that out. But yeah, no, I think this would be a great, great first round if he's available. Makes a lot of sense. I only, you know, I don't want to get too far deep on this because, you know, there's some players here that, you know, this we'll do a deeper dive, if you will. I do want to get to at least round three, because I think that's a nice closeout. Round two, though, Bleeding Green has us taking Xavier Worthy, a wide receiver from Texas, which is interesting, only for the sheer fact of you have basically one of the best combos up top in the NFL for receiver core, and A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. But this is interesting. I don't know much about Xavier Worthy. I really don't, so I can't speak to him or his talent. But what I do know is that beyond Devontae Smith, the Eagles' wide receiving core is very bad. So,
yeah. And honestly, I could see them doing this, but what I would prefer is what I've been seeing batted about with trading either the first round pick, or the first pick and this pick to the Broncos for Patrick Surtain the second.
Ooh, that'd be awesome.
Yeah,
that would be awesome.
Just as long as, with, ironically, the number 54 pick in the draft, we still end up with Jeremiah Trotter Jr.
Yes, and that's why I figured that was a good way to close us out on this one. Is, could you imagine?
Dude, I'm telling you, look, so Tom and I have been discussing our need for a college team because, you know, I don't root for Penn State anymore for personal reasons, Temple's garbage, but I still like them. But I don't have like a legit college team that I root for. Air Force? No, they're not fucking legit. And Tom, you don't either, correct?
No, I went to Murray State. I root for the basketball team because, you know, they've perpetually had decent teams over the years. Football at Murray State, though, is just not good.
So what we were thinking about is, you know, hopefully it still happens and I still move to Spartansburg, which is very, very close to Clemson University. And, you know, that seems like a good team to root for, besides the fact that, you know, Brian Dawkins, one of the greatest Eagles of all time, certainly, you know, my favorite player. Tom, I believe your favorite player as well, he went there, graduated from there. And, you know, with Jeremiah Trotter Jr., that means that we could buy a Trotter and a Dawkins jersey and still be rooting for the Eagles and Clemson. So let's, Howie, make that shit happen.
Yes, I'm down with this. This is, like, to me, one of the – like, it just makes sense. It just makes sense.
Probably the last great linebacker the Eagles have ever found, drafted, brought through their system, and honored. Let's bring his son in. Let's reignite the legacy of the Philadelphia Eagles linebacker core, and let's get this thing going. And fuck Dallas.